The Black Panther movies are the first superhero blockbusters with an African-American director and a predominantly black cast. It's billed as an Afrofuturist project, which means what exactly? Steve Paulson caught up with two women who have been thinking and writing about Afrofuturism for a long time, Ainihi Adoro and Nnedi Okorafor.
So I'm curious, how long have you two known each other?
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of a while, no?
Do you know? I don't know. It's like been just continuous. It feels like we've known each other forever. It's been a while.
Do you remember when you first met or how you first met?
We've never met.
You've never met in person?
No. We have. We met in Berlin. Take that back. We met in Berlin.
Yeah.
2018-ish, maybe, for a book festival.
Wow, this really is the new digital world, isn't it? You clearly know each other pretty well, and yet you've just met like one time in person.
Yes.
Yeah, and I remember when we met, it just felt normal. It didn't feel like, oh, we're meeting for the first time. I just felt like, hi, you know?
Yeah, because in a sense, we have known each other. I think in the digital space, you encounter each other through your thinking and your work. And there's something intimate, actually, I think, about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ainihi Adoro is a literary scholar and the founding editor of Brittle Paper, the preeminent online platform for readers of African literature. Nnedi Okorafor is a celebrated Nigerian-American author of science fiction and fantasy, and she's the writer who coined the term African futurism.
We should talk about what this term African futurism means, because Nnedi, I know that a few years ago, you called yourself an Afrofuturist, and then more recently, you said, you know, that label doesn't really fit anymore. And you've drawn this distinction between Afrofuturism and African futurism. Can you explain the difference?
Yeah. For a while, I tried to embrace the term of Afrofuturism. And then specifically around 2018, when the Black Panther film came out, is when I began to understand that I was doing something else. And the way that I learned that was through other people telling me. So a lot of people saying that I was writing narratives that were not from the perspective and the stories of direct descendants of African slaves. And that is true. And if you look at the definition of Afrofuturism, it's stated that way, that it is the story of African Americans, the direct descendants of African slaves, or stolen Africans is what I prefer to say. And so that's where I coined the term African futurism, which, you know, it's in the same universe as Afrofuturism, but it is more directly rooted in African culture, history, mythology, and point of view.
So what would be some examples of the difference between African futurism and Afrofuturism?
Well, if Black Panther were an African futurist narrative, a lot of things would be different. The very concept of Wakanda would be different.
I want to come back to that. So,
yeah. But like in the Black Panther films, Wakanda, at the end of the movie, the first movie, Wakanda builds an outpost. And their first instinct is to build it in Oakland, California, the United States. An African futurist version would be that Wakanda would build their outpost in a neighboring African country. There'd be dialogue directly with African countries around it first.
Ainihi, I'd love to get your sense. Do you define these terms in the same way that Nnedi was talking about it? Or how might we think about a huge Marvel, Hollywood, blockbuster movie like Wakanda Forever? I mean, how it fits into this conversation we're having.
I would say that for the longest time, Afrofuturism was enough for me in naming a certain kind of black imagination of the future. That changed when Nnedi began to advocate and think about this new term. And that too, an idea of science fiction or of the future that is centered on the Black experience in America, which is kind of framed in relationship to slavery and also is in conversation with whiteness, is going to look completely different when we go to a space where the history is framed by colonialism, right? Because sometimes people present it as a kind of antagonism, you know, like Nnedi is trying to say that Afrofuturism is not enough I think that that is simplifying it. It's just identifying that there are two different genealogies of Blackness in relationship to ideas of the future.
Let me pose the question a different way. Is it a problem that we have the two Black Panther movies that are about this idealized African country? I mean, very much obviously from an American, from a Western perspective. Is that a problem? Or is that just, okay, we just need to understand this is for one audience, a largely Western audience, and I suppose if this movie were made in Nigeria, it would look totally different.
No, I don't think it's a problem. I think that Black Panther is a very important cultural event. I think that the world needed Black Panther. But how well does Black Panther represent a kind of African imagination of the future? I don't know that it does that very well. But I also don't know that it needs to do that in the sense that that's not its project. The problem comes when we begin to expect Black Panther to encompass every Black experience in the world.
So, Nnedi, I'd love to get your perspective on this because, of course, you've been immersed in the Black Panther world.
Yeah.
You've written Marvel comics about the characters in Black Panther.
Yeah. For me, it's complicated. Okay, my issues with Wakanda, and these were things that I thought about when I was trying to decide whether I was going to write T'Challa and Shuri, T'Challa's little sister. These are things that I have grappled with and that I've thought hard about. And I agree with everything that she just said. What I want to add to it is kind of specific. My issues with Wakanda go down to the very bones of it. The existence of a landlocked African country that is supposed to be the wealthiest and most technologically advanced nation in the world, and it never participated in helping with, you know, issues of slavery, colonialism, all that. It never gave back to any of the African countries around it. That's just an issue with me. The idea of this advanced nation being a monarchy is an issue to me. It's technologically advanced and futuristic, but it's a monarchy, really?
Yeah. My reaction to the two Black Panther movies is, so you have this incredibly sophisticated, technologically sophisticated country, Wakanda, but you kind of see the sophistication, especially in the weapons they have, the spacecrafts they have, you know, how they can defend their country, and then this one science lab that Shuri runs, and it seems like it's just her and maybe a couple of assistants. It doesn't seem very futuristic to me. I don't know. Is that incongruous to either of you?
No, I mean, I think that what you say about the emphasis on weapon as kind of the central figuration of the future, right, is like we see the future in weapons as opposed to other places, speaks to the ways in which Black Panther betrays itself as a Western project.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the very idea of vibranium as an extractive technology. It's almost as if everything that the West did to make itself powerful in the world, we just take all of them and layer it on an African world, right? And imagine that that is a much more liberated idea of Africa. Whereas a truly decolonial representation of the future is one that will essentially evacuate everything about the West that has led to its greatness, but that has also led to a ton of violence in equities and things like that. So it's almost as if you look at Wakanda from a certain perspective, it's the West that you're seeing, but acted out by Black bodies. It doesn't push as far as it could have pushed in terms of truly reimagining what a future that is centered on Africa can really look like. And I think that if you want to see how that is done at a level of storytelling, a book to check out is Nnedi's Lagoon, where literally the geopolitics of the world shifts from land to water, from the West to Africa.
So you're really talking about how to tell these stories about the future from a non-Western perspective.
Right.
To decenter the West in all of that.
Yeah, what we're really talking about is worldview here. I don't even like saying when you don't center the West. It's just, it's a different worldview, and that results in a different type of narrative, a different envisioning of what the future will be like, different wants and needs and goals and ideas. Because Western culture dominates things so much, this is often very difficult for people to imagine and understand.
And can I add to that? A retold Black Panther that hangs on an African worldview, I think, might have three characteristics. One, whiteness will not be legible.
You basically won't see white characters.
Right. That it's not just a space where whiteness will be a thing that you have to think with or even think away. It's just won't be part of the world. So it will be a world that will be very, 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 very black. Mm-hmm. And that will also explore and make visible the diversity of life within the continent. And one thing I love about African worlds is the chaos and the messiness of it. It doesn't mean it's disorderly. Sometimes people mistake the two. It's just a world that is not obsessed with forcing everything into categories and hierarchies. So there is order, but order works differently and looks different. And I think that a work like that will embrace that in terms of its feel and aesthetics. And it will be a world that puts an end to colonialism and all the things that are wrapped up with colonialism. So extractive capitalism. And lastly, it's a world that we definitely decenter the human.
Yes.
And you see this all over African science fiction and fantasy. These are stories that allows the animal to exist in much more interesting ways, that allows mythical figures, ancestral figures to exist.
Which is so interesting if we're talking about science fiction, which is futuristic, and yet talking about the ancestors is maybe looking to the past, but I don't know. How do you bring those two together?
So one of the things that became clear after my student and I started to advance in our foray into African science fiction is the extent to which many authors are interested in the past. So one image that keeps popping up in novels that we read is the masquerade. Mm. And this is a figure that appears, I'm talking everywhere. By the end of the class, my students were like, if we see one more masquerade again, right?
Wait, what do you mean by masquerade?
So the masquerade tradition is a very pervasive and ancient tradition in many African worlds. So these are essentially ancestral figures who come into the world of the human in the form of different kinds of masquerades. In the Yoruba tradition, there are festivals like the Gelede festivals, where it's literally the ancestors appearing from the forest when they come in this really elaborately designed costumes. They appear and then they go back to their world. They are figures of the past, but they're also figures of the future, because insofar as they are ancestors, it means if I die, I'm going to meet my ancestor in the future. So they are in the past, but they are in the present, and they're also relevant to the future as well. And in some of the stories that we read, writers would take this figure that because of colonialism, we've come to exclude them as, you know, primitive times. Writers would take these figures and kind of re-energize them or rethink them within the context of the future. And when they do that, what you see is that African science fiction writers do not see the past as a kind of dead time that they don't have to engage with.
Well, Aneti, I would think that as a creator of imaginative worlds, that must be so rich that you feel like you can draw on all of these mythical characters from different African traditions to create a novel about the future.
Yeah, I mean, for me, masquerades are big. They are like, they're very much the center of my work, my imagination, all of that. It's complicated for me to explain why, but like I see the past, present, and the future all mixed together. I like literally don't see the ancestors as beings of the past. They're very much the present. They're very much part of the future, when I'm writing, I feel them looking over my shoulder. I feel them affecting everything that I do. And when it comes to masquerades, masquerades are a much more intense concept to me. I don't even know how to describe them, but for me personally, as a writer, they're not mythical. They are very much now. They're very much here. Like when I'm writing, I can see them dancing. I can hear them dancing. Like it's part of the story. And I love that. I love masquerades. I don't even know how. Yeah, I love masquerades.
So I'm curious. I mean, I'm fascinated by you're saying that, oh, it's like you feel the ancestors looking over your shoulder. I mean, how literal do you mean? Are they with you right there in the room as you're writing?
Yeah. Yeah. It's literal. Like they're there. They're beside me. They're looking over my shoulder. They're in front of me. They're criticizing what I'm doing. They're telling me, don't write that. You know, they're telling me to write that. They're around me. I've always felt my ancestors very strongly, always. Even before I was a writer, it's just always been like that.
Ainahi, a few years ago, you wrote an essay that I think proved to be somewhat controversial about Chinua Achebe, you know, one of the giants of modern African literature. He wrote an essay in 1965 where he said that essentially that African writers had this moral imperative to be a teacher, to teach their readers about the horrors of colonialism, about the trauma of feeling racially inferior. And you said that edict from half a century ago just basically doesn't hold up anymore. What's missing in that way of thinking?
I think it's a thinking that captures his moment beautifully in the sense that decolonization is a very specific kind of project. Achebe saw himself as at the forefront of a cultural reengineering or revolution that needed to happen. But for somebody like me, looking back at that statement, I bristle at it a little bit, right? Because I am not in the eye of the war against colonialism in the way that Achebe was. It's possible that my problem is different. What keeps me up at night is different from what he bothered about. Again, I can sympathize with the ways in which realism came to be the right African form to pursue. And why this idea that, you know, we should all be on message, right? As we are fighting this really powerful cultural enemy. But today we are still fighting colonialism, but it's a different fight that looks differently. Mm-hmm. Part of the fight today is to be able to literally tell different kinds of stories. We are not trying to stay on message, on brand. We are trying to literally break the frames of reference and open up a space where we can reach people through romance fiction, through science fiction, through graphic novels. And that so that decentralization has created a space where we are able to resist the system or fight the fight by making a space where storytelling can proliferate in different forms.
We could go on for a long time. This is really fascinating. I'm just loving this conversation. Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
Yeah, this has been a great, great conversation.
Wonderful. Neddy.
Yeah.
Nice chatting.
Yes, you too. Always, always.
That was Steve Paulson talking with Ainahi Adoro. She's a literary scholar at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the founding editor of Brittle Paper, which is an online platform for readers of African literature. And we heard from Nnedi Okorafor, the celebrated African futurist author. Her most recent YA novel is Akata Woman, and her most recent novel for adults is Noor. Oh, and she also wrote the Shuri comic series for Marvel's Black Panther universe.